The scent would be days old, he said, shaking his head. Even the greatest tracking dog that ever lived could not. Frisky may be the greatest tracking dog that ever lived, Naomi replied, laughing. And tracking in winter is not like tracking in summer, Ben Stodd. In summer, trace dies quickly. It rots, my Da says, and there are 100 other traces to cover the one the dog seeks. Not just of other people and other animals, but of grasses and warm winds, even the smells that come on running water. But in the winter, trace lasts. If we had something that belonged to this Dennis, something that carried his scent... What about the rest of your team? Ben asked. I should open the shed over there, she pointed at it, and leave my bedroll in it. If I show them where it is and then free them, they'll be able to forage for their own food, rabbits and such, and they'll also know where to come for shelter. They won't follow us? Not if they're told not to. You can do that? He looked at her with some awe. No, Naomi said matter-of-factly. I don't speak dog, nor does Frisky speak human, but she understands it. If I tell Frisky, she'll tell the others. They'll hunt what they need, but they won't range far enough to lose the scent of my bedroll, not with the storm coming. And when it starts, they'll go to shelter. It won't matter if their bellies are hungry or full. And if we had something that belonged to this boy Dennis, you really believe Frisky could track him? Aye. Ben looked at her long and thoughtfully. Dennis had left this farm on Tuesday. It was now Sunday. He didn't believe any scent could last that long. But there was something in the house which would bear Dennis's scent, and perhaps even a fool's errand would be better than only sitting here. It was the pointless sitting, more than anything else, that grated on him. The hours ahead when things of grave importance might be happening elsewhere, while they sat and twiddled their thumbs here. Under other circumstances, the possibility of being snowbound with a girl as beautiful as Naomi would have delighted him. But not while a kingdom might be won and lost 20 miles to the east, and his best friend might be living or dying with only that confounded butler to help him. Well? She asked eagerly. What do you think? I think it's crazy, he said. But worth a try. She grinned. Do we have something with his scent strong upon it? We do, he said, getting up. Bring your dog in, Naomi, and lead her upstairs, to the attic. 98. Although most humans don't know it, scents are like colors to dogs. Faint scents have faint colors, like pastels washed out by time. Clear scents have clear colors. Some dogs have weak noses, and they can read scents the way humans with poor eyes see colors, believing this delicate blue may actually be a gray, or that dark brown may actually be a black. Frisky's nose, on the other hand, was like the eyesight of a man with the gaze of a hawk, and the scent in the attic where Dennis had slept was very strong and very clear. It may have helped that Dennis had been some days without a bath. Frisky sniffed the hay and sniffed the blanket the girl held for her. She scented Ireland upon it, but disregarded the scent. It was weaker, and not at all the scent she had found on the hay. Ireland's smell was lemony and tired, and Frisky knew at once that it was the smell of an old man. Dennis's smell was more exciting and vital. To Frisky's nose, it was the electric blue of a summer lightning stroke. She barked to show that she knew this smell and had put it safely away in her library of scents. All right, good girl, the tall boy said. Can you follow it? She'll follow it, the girl said confidently. Let's go. It'll be dark in an hour. That's so, the girl said, and then grinned. When the girl grinned that way, Frisky thought her heart might just burst with love of her. But it isn't her eyes that we want, is it? The tall boy smiled. I guess not, he said. You know, I must be crazy, but I think we're going to pick up these cards and play them. Of course we are, she said. Come on, Ben. Let's use what little daylight's left. It'll be dark soon enough. Frisky, her nose full of that bright blue scent, barked eagerly. 99. Peter's supper came promptly at 6 o'clock that Sunday night. The storm clouds hung heavy over Delane, and the temperature had begun to drop. But the winds hadn't yet begun to blow, and not a snowflake had fallen. On the far side of the plaza, shivering in stolen cook boys' whites, Dennis stood anxiously, drawn back into the deepest shadow he could find, staring at the single square of pale yellow light at the top of the needle, Peter's candle. Peter, of course, knew nothing of Dennis's vigil. He was filled with the wonder of the idea that, live or die, this would be the last meal he would ever eat in this damned prison cell. It was just more tough, salty meat, half-rotted potatoes, and watery ale, but he would eat it all. For the last 3 weeks he had eaten little, and had spent all the waking time he did not spend working at the tiny loom, exercising, readying his body. Today, however, he had eaten everything brought to him. He would need all his strength tonight. What will happen to me? He wondered again, sitting down at the little table and grasping the napkin that lay over his meal. Where exactly will I go? Who will take me in? Anyone? All men, it said, must trust in the gods. But, Peter, you are trusting so much it's ridiculous. Stop. What'll be is what'll be. Now eat, and think no more of... But that was where his restless thoughts broke off, because as he shook the napkin out, he felt a small stab, like the prick of a nettle. Frowning, he looked down and saw that a tiny bead of blood had seeped up on the ball of his right forefinger. Peter's first thought was of flag. In the fairy tales, it was always a needle that bore the poison. Perhaps he had been poisoned now, by flag. That was his first thought, and not such a silly one at that. After all, Flag had used poison before. Peter picked the napkin up, saw a tiny folded object with black smudgy marks on it, and flipped the napkin back down at once. His face remained calm and peaceful, giving away none of the wild excitement that had burst up inside him at the sight of the note pinned inside the napkin. He glanced casually toward the door, suddenly afraid he would see one of the lesser warders, or Beeson himself, staring suspiciously in at him. But there was no one. The prince had been a great object of curiosity when he first came to the needle, stared at as avidly as a rare fish is stared at in a collector's tank. Some of them had even smuggled their lady loves up to look at the murdering monster, and they would have been imprisoned for it themselves if they had been caught. But Peter was a model prisoner, and he had palled quickly. No one was looking at him now. Peter forced himself to eat his entire meal, although he no longer wanted it. He wanted to take not the slightest chance of rousing suspicions, now more than ever. He had no idea who the note might be from, or what it might say, or why it had aroused such a fever in him. But for a note to come now, only hours before he planned to make his try to escape, seemed an omen. But of what? When his meal was finally eaten, he glanced toward the door again, made sure the spy hole was closed, and walked to his bedroom with his napkin still held casually in one hand, almost as if he had forgotten that he held it at all. In the bedroom, he unpinned the note. His hands were trembling so badly he pricked himself again, and unfolded it. It was written closely on both sides, in letters which were rusty and a bit childish, but readable enough. His glance went first to the signature, and his eyes widened. The note was signed, Dennis, your friend and servant forever. Dennis? Peter muttered, so flabbergasted he was unaware that he had whispered aloud. Dennis? He turned back then, and the letter's opening was enough to shock his heartbeat into a fast drum roll. The salutation was, My King. 100. My King, as you may know, for the last 5 years I have buttled in service to your brother Thomas. And just this last week I have found out that you did not murder your father Roland the Good. I know who did. And Thomas knows as well. You would know the name of this black killer if I dared to write it, but I do not. I went to Pena. Pena has gone to join the exiles with his butler, Orlan. He has commanded I come to the castle and write to you this note. Pena says that the exiles may soon become rebels, and this must not be. He thinks you may have some sort of plan, but what he knows not. He commands that I be of service to you, and my Da commanded it too before he died. And my heart commands it, for our family has always served the king, and you are the right king. If you have a plan, I will aid you in any way I can, even if it means my death. As you read this, I am across the plaza, in the shadows, looking at the needle where you are pent up. If you have a plan, come, I pray you, and stand at the window. If you have something on which you can write, then throw down a note, and I will try to retrieve it late this night. Wave twice if you will try this idea. Your friend Ben is with the exiles. Pena said he would send him. I know where he, Ben, will be. If you say I should fetch him, Ben, I can in a day. Or perhaps two if there is snow. I know that throwing down a note might be risky, but I feel time is short. Pena feels the same way. I will be watching and praying. Dennis, your friend and servant forever. 101. It was a long time before Peter could put his whirling thoughts in order. His mind kept circling back to one question. What had Dennis seen to change his mind so radically and completely? What, in the names of all the gods, could it have been? Little by little, he came to realize that it didn't matter. Dennis had seen something, and that was enough. Pena. Dennis had gone to Pena, and Pena had sensed... Well, the old fox had sensed something. He thinks you may have some sort of plan, but what, he knows not. Old fox indeed. He had not forgotten Peter's request for the dollhouse and the napkins. He hadn't known exactly what those things meant, but he had sensed something in the wind. Aye, well and truly. Then what was Peter to do? Part of him, a very large part, wanted to go ahead just as he had planned. He had worked his courage up to this desperate adventure. Now it was hard to let it go for nothing but more waiting. And there were the dreams urging him on as well. You would know the name of this black killer if I dared to write it, but I do not. Peter knew just the same, of course, and it was that more than anything else that convinced him Dennis really had stumbled onto something. Peter felt that Flagg might soon awake to this new development, and he wanted to be gone before that happened. Was a day too long to wait? Perhaps, perhaps not. Peter was torn in an agony of indecision. Ben, Thomas, Flagg, Pena, Dennis. They whirled in his brain like figures seen in a dream. What should he do? In the end, it was the appearance of the note itself, not what was in it, that persuaded him. For it to come this way, pinned to a napkin on the very night he meant to try his rope made of napkins, it meant he should wait. But only for a night. Ben would not be able to help. Could Dennis help him, though? What could he do? And suddenly, in a flash of light, an idea came to him. Peter had been sitting on his bed, hunched over the note, his brows furrowed. Now he straightened up, his eyes alight. His eyes fell on the note again. If you have something on which you can write, then throw down a note and I will try to retrieve it late this night. Yes, of course he had something to write on. Not the napkin itself, because it might be missed. Not Dennis's note either, because it was written on both sides, from side to side and top to bottom. But Valera's parchment was not. Peter went back into his sitting room. He glanced at the door and saw that the spy hole was closed. Dimly he could hear the warders at cards below. He crossed to the window and waved twice, hoping that Dennis was really out there somewhere and could see him. You would just have to hope so. Peter went back to the bedroom, pulled up the loose stone, and after some reaching and fumbling, retrieved the locket and the parchment. He turned the parchment over to the blank side. But what was he to do for ink? After a moment, the answer came to him. The same thing Valera had done, of course. Peter worked at his thin straw mattress, and after some tugging, opened a seam. The stuffing was of straw, and before long he had found a number of good long stalks that would serve as pens. Then he opened the locket. It was in the shape of a heart, and the point at the bottom was sharp. Peter closed his eyes for a moment and said a brief prayer. Then he opened them and drew the point of the locket across his wrist. Blood welled up at once, much more than had come from the pinprick earlier. He dipped the first straw in his blood and began to write. 102. Standing in the cold darkness across the plaza, Dennis saw Peter's shape come to the small window at the top of the needle. He saw Peter raise his arms over his head and cross them twice. There would be a message then. It doubled, no, trebled, his risk. But he was glad. He settled in to wait, feeling numbness slowly creep over his feet and kill the feeling in them. The wait seemed very long. The crier called 10, then 11, finally 12 of the clock. The clouds had hidden the moon, but the air seemed strangely light, another sign of a coming storm. He was beginning to think that Peter must have forgotten him or changed his mind when that shape came to the window again. Dennis straightened up, wincing at the pain in his neck, which had been cocked upward for the last 4 hours. He thought he saw something arc out, and then Peter's shape left the high window. A moment later, the light up there was extinguished. Dennis looked left and right, saw no one, took all of his courage in his hands, and ran out into the plaza. He knew perfectly well that there might be someone, a more alert guard of the watch than last night's tuneless singer, for instance, whom he hadn't seen. But there was nothing to be done about that. He was also gruesomely aware of all the men and women who had been beheaded not far from here. What if their ghosts were still around, lurking? But thinking about such things did no good, and so he tried to put them from his mind. Of more immediate concern was just finding the thing that Peter had thrown. The area at the foot of the needle below Peter's window was a featureless white snowfield. Feeling horribly exposed, Dennis began to cast about like an inept hunting dog. He wasn't sure what he had seen glimmering in the air. It had been there only for a second, but it had looked solid. That made sense. Peter would not have thrown a piece of paper, which might have fluttered anywhere. But what and where was it? As the seconds ticked by, turning into minutes, Dennis began to feel more and more frantic. He dropped to his hands and knees and began to crawl about, peering into footprints which had melted to the size of dragon prints earlier that day, and which were now refreezing, hard and blue and shiny. Sweat coursed down his face, and he began to be deviled by a recurring idea that a hand would fall on his shoulder, and when he turned he would see the grinning face of the king's magician inside his dark cowl. A little late for hide-and-seek, isn't it, Dennis? Flagg would say. And although his grin would widen, his eyes would burn a baleful, hellish red. What have you lost? Can I help you find it? Don't think his name. For the gods' sake, don't think his name. But it was hard to stop. Where was it? Oh, where was it? Back and forth Dennis crawled, his hands now as numb as his feet. Back and forth, back and forth. Where was it? Bad enough if he was unable to find it. Worse still if the snow held off until morning light, and someone else did. Gods knew what it might say. Dimly, he heard the crier call 1 o'clock. He was now covering ground he had already covered before, becoming more and more panicky. Stop, Dennis. Stop, boy. His Dawes voice, too clear in his head to be mistaken. Dennis had been on his hands and knees, his nose almost on the ground. Now he straightened up a little. You're not seeing anything anymore, boy. Stop and close your eyes for a moment. And when you open them, look around. Really look around. Dennis closed his eyes tight and then opened them wide. This time he looked around almost casually, scanning the whole snowy tracked area around the foot of the needle. Nothing. Nothing at...
Wait! There! Over there!
Something glimmered. Dennis saw a curve of metal, barely poking half an inch out of the snow. Beside it, he could see a round track made by one of his knees. He had almost crawled over the thing during his frantic hunt. He tried to pluck it from the snow, and on his first try only pushed it farther in. His hand was almost too numb to close. Digging in the snow for the metal object, Dennis realized that if his knee had come down on it instead of beside it, he would have driven it more deeply into the snow without even feeling it. His knees were as numb as the rest of him, and then he never would have seen it at all. It would have remained buried until the spring thaws. He touched it, forced his fingers to close, and brought it out. He looked at it wonderingly. It was a locket. A locket which might be gold, in the shape of a heart. There was a fine chain attached to it. The locket was shut, but caught in its jaws was a folded piece of paper. Very old paper. Dennis pulled the note free, closed his hand gently over the old paper, and flipped the locket's chain over his head. He got creakily to his feet and ran back toward the shadows. That run was, in a way, the worst part of the whole business for him. He had never felt so exposed in his whole life. For every step he ran, the comforting shadows of the buildings on the far side of the plaza seemed to recede a step. At last he reached comparative safety and stood in the shadows for a while, panting and shuddering. When he had gotten his breath, he turned to the castle, slinking along the fourth alley in the shadows and entering by Cook's Way. There was a guard of the watch at the doorway leading into the castle proper, but he was as sloppy about his duties as his mate had been the night before. Dennis waited, and eventually the guard wandered off. Dennis darted inside. 20 minutes later, he was safely back in the storeroom of the napkins. Here he unfolded the note and looked at it. One side was closely writ in an archaic hand. The writer had used a strange rust-colored ink, and Dennis could make nothing of it. He turned the note over, and his eyes widened. He recognized the ink that had been used to write the short message on this side easily enough. "Oh, King Peter," he moaned. The message was smeared and blurry. The ink had not been blotted. But he could read it. "Met to try escape tonight. Will wait one night. Dare wait no longer. Don't go for Ben. No time. Too dangerous. I have a rope. Thin. May break. Too short. Will be a drop in any case. 20 feet. Midnight tomorrow. Help me away if you can. Safe place. May be hurt. In the hands of the gods. I love you, my good Dennis. King Peter." Dennis read this note 3 times and then burst into tears. Tears of joy. That light Pena had sensed was now shining brightly in Dennis's own heart. That was well, and soon all would be well. His eyes returned again and again to the line, "I love you, my good Dennis," written in the king's own blood. He had not needed to add that for the message to make sense, and yet he had. "Peter, I would die 1,000 deaths for you," Dennis thought. He put the note inside his jerkin and lay down with the locket still around his neck. It was a very long time before sleep found him this time, and he had not slept long before he snapped wide awake. The door of the storeroom was opening. The low creak of its hinges seemed an inhuman shriek to Dennis. Before his sleep-fuddled mind even had time to realize he had been found, a dark shadow with burning eyes swept down on him. 103. The snow began at around 3 o'clock that Monday morning, Ben Stodd saw the first flakes go skating past his eyes as he and Naomi stood at the edge of the king's preserves, looking out toward the castle. Frisky sat on her haunches, panting. The humans were tired, and Frisky was tired as well, but she was eager to go. The scent had grown steadily fresher. She had led them easily from Pena's farm to the deserted house where Dennis had spent some 4 days, eating raw potatoes and thinking sour thoughts about turnips, which turned out to be as sour as the thoughts themselves. In that empty inner Barony's farmstead, the bright blue scent she had followed this far had been everywhere. She had barked excitedly, running from room to room, nose down, tail wagging cheerfully. "Look," Naomi said. "Our Dennis burnt something here." She was pointing at the fireplace. Ben came and looked, but he could make out nothing. There were only bundles of ash which fell apart when he poked at them. Of course, they were Dennis's early tries at his note. "Now what?" Naomi asked. "He went to the castle from here, that's clear. The question is, do we follow or spend the night here?" It had then been 6 o'clock. Outside, it was already dark. "I think we had better go on," Ben said slowly. "After all, it was you who said we wanted Frisky's nose, not her eyes. And I, for one, would testify before the throne of any king in creation that Frisky has a noble nose." Frisky, sitting in the doorway, barked as if to say she knew it. "All right," Naomi said. He looked at her closely. It had been a long run from the camp of the exiles, with little rest for either of them. He knew they should stay, but he was nearly frantic with urgency. "Can you go on?" he asked. "Don't say you can if you can't, Naomi Rachel." She put her hands on her hips and looked at him haughtily. "I could go on 100 kroner from the place where you dropped dead, Ben Stodd." Ben grinned. "You may get your chance to prove it, too," he said. "But first we'll have a bite to eat." They ate quickly. When the meal was finished, Naomi knelt by Frisky and quietly told her that she must take up the scent again. Frisky didn't have to be asked twice. The three of them quit the farmhouse, Ben with a large pack on his back, Naomi with one only slightly smaller. To Frisky, Dennis's scent was a blue mark in the night, as bright as a wire glowing with an electric charge. She began to follow at once, and was confused when the girl called her back. Then it came to her. If Frisky had been human, she would have slapped her forehead and groaned. In her impatience to be off, she had started sniffing up Dennis's back trail. By midnight, she would have had them back at Pena's farmhouse. "That's all right, Frisky," Naomi said. "Take your time." "Sure," Ben said. "Take a week or two, Frisky. Take a month if you want." Naomi cast a sour glance Ben's way. Ben shot up, prudently, perhaps. The two of them watched Frisky nose back and forth, first across the dooryard of the deserted farm, then across the road. "Has she lost it?" Ben asked. "No, she'll pick it up in a minute or two." "I think," Naomi didn't say aloud. "It's just that she's found a whole tangle of scents in the road and she has to sort them out." "Look," Ben said doubtfully. "She's off into the field there. That can't be right, can it?" "I don't know. Would he have taken the road to the castle?" Ben Stodd was human, and he did slap his forehead. "No, of course not. I'm a dolt." Naomi smiled sweetly and said nothing. In the field, Frisky had paused. She turned toward the girl and the tall boy and barked impatiently for them to follow. Anduin huskies were the tame descendants of the great white wolves the residents of the northern barony had feared in earlier times. But tame or not, they were hunters and trackers before they were anything else. Frisky had isolated that bright blue thread of a scent again, and was in a fever to be off. "Come on," Ben said. "I just hope she's found the right scent." "Of course she has. Look." She pointed, and Ben was just able to make out long, shallow tracks in the snow. Even in the dark, Ben and Naomi knew the tracks for what they were. Snowshoes. Frisky barked again. "Let's hurry," Ben said. By midnight, as they began to draw close to the king's preserves, Naomi began to regret the crack she'd made about how she could go on 100 kroner from the place where Ben dropped dead, because she had begun to feel as if that might soon happen to her. Dennis had made the trip in better time, but Dennis had set out after 4 days of rest. Dennis had had snowshoes, and Dennis had not been following a dog who sometimes lost the scent and had to cast about for it again. Naomi's legs felt hot and rubbery. Her lungs burned. There was a stitch in her left side. She had taken a few mouthfuls of snow, but they could not slake her raging thirst. Frisky, who was not burdened by a pack and who could run lightly along the snow crust, was not tired at all. Naomi was able to walk on the crust for short distances, but then she would strike a rotten spot and plunge through the crust into soft snow up to her knees, and on several occasions up to her hips. Once she plunged in waist-deep and floundered about in a tired fury until Ben worked his way over and pulled her out.
"Wish sled," she panted now. "Wishes horses, beggars would ride," he panted back, grinning in spite of his own weariness.
"Funny," she gasped. "Ha, ha, ought to be a court jester, Ben Stodd. King's preserves up there. Less snow. Easier."
He bent over, hands on his knees, and gasped for breath. Naomi suddenly felt that she had been selfish and unkind, thinking about how she herself felt when Ben must be even closer to the point of exhaustion. He was much heavier than she, especially with the weight of the larger pack he carried added into the bargain. He had been breaking through the snow crust on almost every step, leaping through the long fields like a man running in deep water. And yet he had not complained or slowed.
"Ben, are you all right?"
"No," he wheezed and grinned. "But I'll make it, pretty child."
"I'm not a child," she said angrily.
"But you are pretty,"
he said and put his thumb to the tip of his nose. He wiggled his fingers at her.
"Oh, I'll get you for that. Later," he panted. "Race you to the woods. Come on."
So they raced, with Frisky chasing along the scent ahead of them, and he beat her, and that made her madder than ever. But she admired him, too. 104. Now they stood looking across the 70 kroner of open ground between the edge of the forest where King Roland had once slain a dragon and the walls of the castle where he had been slain himself. A few more snowflakes skirled down from the sky, and a few more. And suddenly, magically, the air was filled with snow. In spite of his weariness, Ben felt a moment of peace and joy. He looked at Naomi and smiled. She tried a scowl, but it wouldn't fit her face, and so she smiled too. A moment later, she ran her tongue out and tried to catch a flake of snow. Ben laughed quietly. "How did he get inside, if he did?" Naomi asked.
"I don't know," Ben said.
He had grown up on a farm and knew nothing of the castle's sewer system. Probably every bit as well for him, you might say. And you would be right. "Perhaps your champion dog can show us how he did it."
"You really think he did, don't you, Ben?"
"Oh, I," Ben said. "What do you think, Frisky?" At the sound of her name, Frisky got up, ranged along the scent for a few feet, and looked back at them. Naomi looked at Ben. Ben shook his head.
"Not yet," he said.
Naomi called Frisky softly, and she came back, whining. "If she could talk, she'd tell you she's afraid of losing the scent. The snow will cover it." "We'll not wait long. Dennis had the snowshoes, but we're going to have something he didn't, Naomi."
"What's that?"
"Cover." 105. In spite of Frisky's growing restlessness at being checked on the scent, Ben made them wait 15 minutes. By then, the air had become a shifting cloud of white. Snow frosted Naomi's brown hair and his own blonde hair. Frisky wore a cold ermine stole. They could no longer see the castle walls ahead of them.
"All right," Ben said softly. Let's go.
They crossed the open ground behind Frisky. The big husky moved slowly now, her nose constantly at the snow, puffing it up every now and again in cold little bursts. The bright blue runner of scent was dimming, being covered by the white no-smell stuff from the sky. "We may have waited too long," Naomi said quietly beside him. Ben said nothing. He knew it, and the knowledge gnawed at his heart like a rat. Now a dark bulk loomed out of the whiteness. The castle wall. Naomi had moved slightly ahead. Ben reached out and grabbed her arm.
"The moat," he said. "Don't forget that. It's up here somewhere. You'll go over the side and land on the ice and break your neck."
He got just so far, and then Naomi's eyes blazed with alarm. She pulled out of his grip.
"Frisky!" she hissed. "Hi! Frisky! Danger! Drop off!"
She darted after the dog. "That girl is absolutely giddy bonkers," Ben thought with a certain admiration. Then he darted after her. Naomi needn't have worried. Frisky had stopped at the edge of the moat. Her nose was buried in the snow, and her tail was wagging happily. Now she bit down on something and dragged it out of the loose powder. She turned to Naomi, eyes asking, "Now am I a good dog or what? What do you think?" Naomi laughed and hugged her dog. Ben glanced toward the castle wall.
"Hush," he whispered at her. "If the guards hear you, we're in the slate cracker for sure. Where do you think we are, your back garden?"
"Pooh. If they heard anything, they'd think it was snow sprites and run for their mommies."
But she whispered too. Then she buried her face in Frisky's fur and told her again what a good dog she was. Ben scratched Frisky's head. Because of the snow, neither of them had the horribly exposed sense Dennis had had when he had sat in the same place, taking off the snowshoes Frisky had now found.
"Nose of the gods, all right," Ben said.
"But what happened after he took off the snowshoes, Frisky?
Did he grow wings and fly over Westward Redan? Where did he go from here?"
As if in answer, Frisky broke away from both of them and went floundering and slipping down the steep bank to the frozen moat.
"Frisky!"
Naomi called, her voice low but alarmed. Frisky only stood on the ice looking up at them, hock deep in new snow. Her tail was wagging slightly, and her eyes begged them to come. She did not bark. Somehow she knew better, even though Naomi had not thought to warn her to silence. But she barked in her mind. The scent was still here, and she wanted to follow it before it disappeared completely, as it now would within minutes. Naomi looked questioningly at Ben.
"Yes," he said. "Of course. We have to.
Come on. But keep her to heel. Don't let her range ahead. There's danger here. I feel it." He held out his hand. Naomi grasped it, and they slid down to the moat together. Frisky led them slowly across the ice toward the castle wall. She was now actually digging for the scent, her nose furrowing the snow. It had begun to be overlaid with a thick, unpleasant smell. Dirty, warm water, garbage, ordure. Dennis had known that the ice would begin to grow dangerously rotten as he got closer to the outflow pipe. Even if he hadn't known, he was able to see the 3 feet or so of open water next to the wall. Things weren't so easy for Ben, Naomi, and Frisky. They had simply assumed that if the ice was thick along the moat's outer bank, it must be thick all the way across, and their eyes were of little use to them in the thickly falling snow. Frisky's eyes were the weakest of the three, and she was in the lead. Her ears were sharp enough, and she had heard the ice groaning beneath the new snow, but the scent was too much on her mind for her to take much notice of the faint creaks. Until the ice gave way beneath her, and she plunged into the moat with a splash.
"Frisky!"
Ben clapped a hand over her mouth. She struggled to get away from him. Ben had now seen the danger, however, and held her fast. Naomi needn't have worried. Of course, all dogs can swim, and with her thick, oily coat, Frisky was safer in the water than either of the humans would have been. She paddled almost to the castle wall amid chunks of rotted ice and whipped cream globs of snow that quickly turned into dark slush and disappeared. She raised her head, smelling, searching for the scent. And when she knew where it went, she turned and paddled back toward Ben and Naomi. She found the edge of the ice. Her paws broke it off, and she tried again. Naomi cried out,
Be still, Naomi, or you'll have us in the dungeons by dawn, Ben said. Hold my ankles.
He let her go and then sprawled on his belly. Naomi crouched behind him and seized his boots. This close to the ice, Ben could hear it groaning and muttering.
It could have been one of us, he thought,
and that would have been trouble indeed. He spread his legs out a bit to distribute his weight better, and then grabbed Frisky by the forepaws just below her wide, strong chest.
Here you come, girl, Ben grunted. I hope.
Then he pulled. For a moment, Ben thought that the ice would just go on breaking under Frisky's weight as he dragged her forward. First he and then Naomi would follow Frisky into the moat. Crossing that moat on his way into the castle to play with his friend Peter on a summer's day, with blue sky and white clouds reflecting off its surface, Ben had always thought it beautiful, like a painting. He had never once suspected that he might die in it one black night during a snowstorm, and it smelled very bad.
Pull me backward, he grunted. Your damn dog weighs a ton. Don't you say mean things about my dog, Ben Stodd.
Ben's eyes were slitted shut with strain, his lips split open over clenched teeth.
A million pardons. If you don't start pulling me, I'm going to be taking a bath, I think.
Somehow she managed to do it, although Ben and Frisky together must have been three times her own weight. Ben's prone, splayed body dug a channel in the new powder. A snow pyramid built up in his crotch, the way it will build up in the angle of a wooden plow. At last, it seemed like at last to Ben and Naomi, although in truth it was probably only a matter of seconds, Frisky's chest stopped breaking the ice and slid onto it. A moment later, her rear paws were digging for purchase. Then she was up and shaking herself vigorously. Dirty moat water sprayed into Ben's face.
Ha!
He grimaced, wiping it off. Thanks a lot, Frisky. But Frisky paid no attention. She was looking toward the wall of the castle again. Although the ice was already freezing to her pelt in dirty spicules, the scent was what interested her. She had smelled it clearly, above her, but not far above her. There was a darkness there. No cold, white, no-smell stuff there. Ben was getting to his feet, brushing the snow off.
I'm sorry I yelled like that, Naomi whispered.
If it had been any other dog but Frisky,
do you think I was heard?
If you had been, we'd have been challenged, Ben whispered back.
Gods, that was close.
Now they could see the open water just in front of the ancient stone wall of Castle Delane's outer redan, because they were looking for it.
What do we do?
We can't go on, Ben whispered. That's obvious.
But what did he do, Naomi? Where did he go from here? Maybe he did fly. If we...
But Naomi never finished the thought, because that was when Frisky took matters into her own paws. All of her ancestors had been famous hunters, and it was in her blood. She had been set upon this exciting, enticing electric blue scent, and she found she could not leave it. So she screwed her haunches down to the ice, tensed her sled-toughened muscles, and leaped into the dark. Her eyes, as I've said, were the least of her sensory equipment, and her leap really was blind. She could not see the dark hole of the sewer pipe from the edge of the ice. But she had seen it from the water, and even if she hadn't, she had her nose, and she knew it was there.
106. It's Flag! Dennis's sleep-fuddled mind thought as that dark shape with the burning eyes swept down on him.
It's Flag. He's found me, and now he'll rip my throat out with his teeth.
He tried to scream, but no sound came out. The mouth of the intruder did open. Dennis saw huge white teeth, and then a big warm tongue was lapping his face.
Ugh!
Dennis said, trying to push the thing away. Paws came up on either shoulder, and Dennis fell back on his mattress of napkins like a pinned wrestler. Lap, lap, lick, lick.
Ugh!
Dennis said again, and the dark, shaggy shape uttered a low, companionable woof, as if to say, I know it.